Back Talk is an extension of the long-running, award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 3:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests.
I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando. James Bond. Do I need to say more?
He's back.
Oh, my God.
And it's been a long wait. Boy, I remember back in the spring of last year, it was April, right when the pandemic hit. And, you know, one of the things that I was looking forward to so much was this movie. I'd been waiting for it for so long. And, of course, it was delayed. And when this movie was delayed, it was the first sign to me that, boy, something in the world was really off.
And it's the swan song of Daniel Craig as James Bond.
And finally having him back puts the world right again in some ways.
Okay, so this is a very long movie.
It is.
Maybe the longest of the year.
I did not feel the length of it for a second.
Okay.
You know, there are two kinds of people in this world. The kind of people that that enjoy these films casually, and the kind of people for whom they are, you know, a chapter in their lives, something that, you know, it matters deeply to you. I mean, I've been watching James Bond movies, you know, and they have mattered to me since as far back as I can remember. So I love it. I can sit there. It feels epic to me. I love Bond getting the epic treatment. So I was all for it.
So you have members of your family who aren't quite as into it as you are. And how did they respond?
Well, my wife, you know, she was eager to see it. She gets it. She likes it. She loves Daniel Craig's iteration of Bond. She loves the emotional Bond. You know, she wasn't able to stick around for the whole thing.
Right.
Because she got ill. But yeah, she's into it. My kids love it. My oldest especially. You know, I've successfully planted the Bond seed in him. He really enjoyed this send-off. Daniel Craig obviously is, you know, he's the second best Bond.
He is to Connery.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Connery being the best. You know, James Bond gets a lot of criticism for being this dinosaur, this holdover macho fantasy. You know, I got to say, no, mm-hmm. You're wrong. James Bond has, you know, by the way, that line, you're a dinosaur. Dame Judi Dench uttered that line to Pierce Brosnan 25
years
ago. Is
that right?
Yeah, you're a dinosaur. James Bond is always changing with the times. A good Bond movie places him in the world and watches him sort of react to it or change accordingly with it. And Daniel Craig has done that in spades.
And I think that the Bond character has matured itself over these, got to be 50 years, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It matured to the point where we have a much more emotional Bond. And so not the cool, slick, original Sean Connery. You now have here a stubbier, beefier, and more emotional.
Well, you have a Bond capable of love and brutality.
Yes.
And I love that combination.
Yeah, some people won't accept. I mean, he must say I love you two or three times. When did Sean Connery ever say I love you? Didn't even get married in one?
That was George Lazenby in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, which, by the way, this movie ends with the theme song to that film.
Oh, is that right? I would never know that.
Well, see, that's
right. Yeah,
that's absurd to me. Of course you should know that.
Well, we have some of the old tropes in this movie, don't we?
Of course.
We've got a bad boy.
Yep.
Going to somehow save or destroy the world, both at one time, played by Rami Malek. A little bit underplayed, as far as I can see, with the weirdest accent I've ever heard.
Yeah, I would say not only underplayed, I was surprised at how little Rami Malek is in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
His character is, you know, has a...
good point.
Like a handful of scenes.
Yes.
I was really surprised at that. I thought there was going to be a lot more of him, a lot more interaction. He is, you know, how many times can great actors do villains? It's hard, right? Yes. It is hard to cut. You have, what's his face? What's the guy's? Christoph Waltz. Sorry.
Oh.
Hold on. Let me catch that back up. Three, two. You have Christoph Waltz pop back up as Blofeld. He's got one scene. He nails it.
He does, but that's it, and he's gone.
Right, he's gone. Well, we're tying ends up. We're, I know. You know, he hands the baton off to Safine, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, Rami Malek does what he can. I mean, there's been, at least in the Bond, in the Craig Bond pictures, you've had Mads Mikkelsen, who's probably the best villain,
come on, yes.
as Le Chiff.
Wow.
Then you have Javier Bardem in Skyfall. You know, you have all these great actors doing these little turns. They can only, there's only so much you can do with a villain part. It's really about the struggles that they put Bond through.
Sure. And one of his struggles is love.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, much more prominent than I remember. And well, he's not married, but he apparently has a child by his love.
Yeah, so this is definitely a first. James Bond has been in love before, but James Bond has never had a kid.
That's right.
And there's some question as to whether or not it's the kid. But, you know, it's fun. It's fun to play with these things, right? Because we know we're resetting. We know with this film, we're resetting the franchise, right? We're going to go back to something.
This little blue-eyed kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the blue eyes are the identifying factor for thinking that it's James Bond's daughter. Someone suggested to me that she might be the future Bond.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well, Barbara Broccoli has said it will not be a woman.
It won't be a woman. And you know, in my fantasy world, what would happen is much like the Marvel Extended Universe, the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that they would create a BCU, a Bond Cinematic Universe. Why not have movies, spin-off movies, where you follow the adventures of 00 or 001 or 009, for that matter? You could have all kinds of different people playing these parts. Create, as Daniel Craig himself said, don't just try to fix problems of representation by plugging in, you know, different people into this role. Create equally exciting, dynamic roles for other people, women included.
Well, I think that they've done a terrific job in trying to replace people like Judi Dench as M with Ralph Fiennes. He brings a different take to it.
Exactly. And also, can we just stop for a second and recognize that? So, you know, we keep pointing to this franchise as like barbaric, but, you know, it was a big deal when Judi Dench was cast as M.
Yes.
She had replaced a man after 30 years of you know, that role being played by a man.
Yeah.
So Bond has always been evolving.
Yes.
It's reductive to think it has.
I think making it a man this time brings a little more discipline to it. There's something different about his relationship with Bond. You know, Bond, where are you? And
well, it created a dramatic crux for Craig's Bond, because he had a back and forth with Judi Dench's M that was both maternal and, you know, like a boss relationship.
Sure, yeah.
And there was, you know, they were always playing with that. When it finally becomes clear how much Judi Dench's M loves Bond,
yes,
her death in Skyfall, and then thus her replacement with a man, poses a problem for him. It served a dramatic purpose to cast Ralph Fiennes.
And,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not just like we're putting a man back.
No, exactly.
But how was Bond going to respond to taking orders from this man?
Exactly. Which you need a good actor like Daniel Craig to carry that off in such a small time. What about Ben Whishaw?
Yeah, he's Q. Fun. He's fun as Q. Again, we're doing different things, right? You're casting somebody who is a little physically different from Desmond Llewellyn, the tall guy, and John Cleese from the Pierce Brosnan movies. Of course, in this franchise, in Craig's iteration of the franchise, you don't get Q right away. Q doesn't show up until Skyfall, right? So you get two movies, two Q-less movies. Again, the effort to reshape the franchise in a more realistic, brooding vein was to keep that kind of component at bay for a while. This movie, No Time to Die, look, it's got an emotional heft, and it also plays around with the fun stuff. You have nods to Dr. No.
Oh,
the,
I think,
the Moloch,
don't you think, quite a bit of modeling on Dr. No on
for
this
sure.
Thing.
The lighted sort of rods coming out of the... The compound floor,
yeah.
The hazmat suits, yeah. The colored hazmat suits. Lots of great stuff here. Fun stuff, gadgetry, you know, that's not overdone, but like the villain with the one eye, the robotic
eye. Oh, excellent. Naomi Harris as Moneypenny.
I think I love her.
Big departure from the kind of middle-aged, staid, but having an eye for Bond. I mean, that is a completely different take.
Another thing this Craig iteration has been doing from the start, they took Moneypenny and they made her a compatriot and somebody that he worked alongside of. He fought alongside of Moneypenny. Early on when there were talks of, you know, this new Bond, I thought maybe her, right?
Yeah.
She inherited the mantle. But, there's always been a charge there between them, a mutual respect, a playful camaraderie. And also, I just think I've always loved seeing him fight alongside Moneypenny.
Yeah.
It's been really great.
Yeah, yeah. Is it worth seeing?
It's definitely worth seeing. It's worth seeing if you care about this franchise. It's worth seeing on the big screen to say goodbye to one of the great Bonds of all time. It's hard to, you know, every time a Bond movie comes out, I see this concentrated effort to diminish it on, you know, in some ways. Look, this is one of the longest running franchises in cinematic history.
Oh my Lord, yes.
You have to admit that there's something timeless about this character, and it's not all about this male fantasy. There's something inherent in who Bond is that keeps people coming back and keeps actors wanting to take a stab at it. So I think it's great. I think, did Bond save movie going? I don't know. Is it worth seeing in the theater?
It's made some
money.
And
as of press time, it's globally hit the $300 million.
Yeah, right.
Mark.
I mean, how bad is that?
No, it's not bad. It's good.
And when we were in the theater, there weren't that many people besides our entourage.
Yeah, well, we saw it before people get out of work usually. Now, do you want us to do the grading thing?
Oh, no, I don't do grading.
Oh, you don't do grading?
No.
For its movie time?
Right. Now it's what
would you suggest to our listeners?
Interesting.
Is how I end it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so what are we doing?
So
are we saying
we're expanding?
You're listening to Double Take? Okay.
So we're expanding into a bigger Bond.
Got it.
All right. And my question to you now that we've taken care of No Time to Die, and we recognize that the Bond franchise is not dying,
mm-hmm.
is coming back, everybody waiting to see who the new Bond is.
Okay.
I got to ask you, because you're...
Wait, are we recording?
Yeah, we're still...
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well, hold on. I didn't know this. Start that part over again.
Well, we're not... All right. So now that we've taken care of No Time to Die,
mm-hmm.
James Bond, the newest iteration, starring Daniel Craig, I have a question to ask my dear friend, you, and my colleague, who knows more about Bond than anybody I know. What's your favorite?
My favorite Bond?
Yeah.
Of all time?
Yeah.
Wow, that is a tough question. My favorite, I guess, would be, it's back there in the Connery era, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to say Goldfinger.
Oh, good for you, because it's mine too.
Goldfinger is, and I'll tell you why, because that's when Bond, Connery's iteration sort of came into perfection. There was, you know, style to burn in that movie. You got all the great Bond posturing, Connery looking spectacular. Bond is fun, but he's dangerous. There's a perfect element. Now, if I was going to pick another one, it would be From Russia with Love, which I feel has the fantasy elements to it, but it's much more grounded in a kind of spy adventure.
Yeah, that's it has Sean Connery and Robert Shaw. Now, anytime Robert Shaw is in something, you've got to pay attention.
Yeah.
And this guy is really good. I also love Goldfinger because I think Gert Frobe is unforgettable. He's kind of a mashup of a businessman
mm-hmm.
and a tyrant and a guy who you might like the first moment you meet him.
You bring up a great point about Gert Frobe, right? Here's an actor that probably outside of Germany or whatever, no one knew, right? And outside of Goldfinger, no one knows.
Yes,
the villain role in the early 60s had not become quite so fraught with how do you do it? How do you play it, right? Here's a guy, as you succinctly put, he's a guy, he's a businessman. His capitalist greed is out of control.
Yes, good.
But, he's got these toys, the laser beam that he's going to slice Bond in half with. But his playing of the character, it's like a guy, it's like an a-hole you might run into at the country club. You know what I mean?
I do.
He's grounded in a sort of realism. There's not a lot of this actor groping for bigness.
Good, yeah. Now, talk to me about this. IMDb lists Casino Royale as the best, 2006.
It's up there.
And why?
Well, because it was such a surprise. No one had ever attempted to reboot Bond. I think by that time, by 2006, we had all sort of culturally accepted the fact that every Bond picture stood on its own. We knew who he was. It's baked into the theme song of that film, which is "You Know My Name." So we're starting over in that movie. Bond earns his 00 status early on in the picture, and from there it is just rip-roaring, emotionally saturated movie. We talk about Bond and love. Bond is in love in that movie. And again, I'll reiterate, it's not the first time Bond has been in love.
Yes, right.
But Daniel Craig's Bond has been heartsick from the start. And it starts with that movie. I still think the opening chase scene of that movie is not only one of the best in Bond franchise history, but in action movie history. Him chasing the guy through the construction scene and then into the embassy is one of the most thrilling foot chases ever captured on screen. Right.
And what did you think about the chase at the beginning of No Time to Die? I thought that was pretty good.
I loved it. He's fraught. He's upset because he believes that Madeline has betrayed him, right? Which is a big thing for this guy.
A very good bit.
Right?
Yes.
And when he stops the car and refuses to move it because he's heartsick.
Yes.
And these guys are just shooting at them. it's the quintessential Craig moment, right? Yes. It's Bond's moment. He's angry. He's brokenhearted. And this is the thing that always pulses under Bond. The death wish. The thing that always pulses under this character is, why does he keep trying to save the world when he really just wants to die? Right?
It reminds me that in that movie, I thought the best line for me was when she's up on the scaffolding with that Russian scientist.
Mm-hmm.
That is the new 007 for a few moments.
Oh, yeah.
She's up there.
Yeah.
And she asks him, "What time is it?" She says, "Time to die," as he pushes him off. And I thought, what a great moment.
Yeah, they gave her a nice little line. Yeah.
I know. There's so many that are meaningful to us culturally, I think. Now, how about another one that comes to your mind immediately?
You know, I do want to say, I don't want to give short shrift, and I think he always gets the crap end of the stick in these discussions, is Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan in GoldenEye, and I actually think The World Is Not Enough is an underrated Bond movie. Fun, has some great action set pieces. Pierce Brosnan, there could not be Daniel Craig's iteration without Pierce Brosnan.
Okay.
Let me explain why. Pierce Brosnan sort of rescued the franchise in a way. So you had that big long run from Roger Moore.
I know, and people are going to dump on Roger Moore, and I liked that much.
Roger Moore was likable. He was a likable Bond, and I went to see all those movies, but he was a lightweight Bond.
I know, and
he just was silly. And so then they cast Timothy Dalton, and that was their first attempt to bring it back, right, to kind of give it some grit.
And to,
add some
move toward a Daniel Craig
heft. Yes. Right. But audiences didn't respond to
No, they were not
Timothy
ready for
Dalton.
That at all.
I just don't think Timothy Dalton was the guy to for yeah. that part.
What about George Lazenby?
George Lazenby was, you know, hard to say how great of a Bond he would have been in the long run, but he was a great Bond in that movie. He was a great one-off yeah. Bond. That guy totally just bailed on it on his own. He just sort of had a mental break
yep.
and couldn't do it or didn't want to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But my point is that Pierce Brosnan had these guys behind him, right? He had Connery behind him, Lazenby behind him, Moore and Dalton behind him. And what he wanted to do, you could tell that he was a Connery fan. Now, he looked more like a Roger Moore, but what he did was bring that Roger Moore suaveness, but he brought some of that Sean Connery sort of insouciance and toughness.
Great word, yes.
And so I think, you know, he really laid the foundation for Craig.
Yes, he did. And, you know, he had kind of upped the game for the Connery character because he had a little bit of Connery's elegance and added to that. The problem was, I think he had not, as far as I'm concerned, not enough range in his performance. It was Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah. Well, they didn't give it to him.
Yeah, right.
But there are hints of it. There are moments of it. There is a moment where Brosnan's Bond, I believe, sees his wife's tombstone, I think, or there's one in Roger Moore. Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, just a little side trivia for you that's really interesting. Pierce Brosnan was considered for the part many years before he actually got it, but he couldn't, because of Remington Steele, couldn't entertain it. The other thing is, Brosnan's first wife was a Bond girl in For Your Eyes Only.
Wow.
She died of cancer. So there's this meta-textuality Brosnan's being cast as Bond.
Yeah.
Because his wife was part of the franchise before he was, and he tragically lost her to cancer, like Bond tragically loses his wife. She's assassinated, though.
And I always liked him in GoldenEye. I thought that it...
GoldenEye has one of the great Bond chases in the franchise. When he's in the tank, he takes over the tank. There's a moment in Skyfall where Craig's character winks back to Brosnan's portrayal. Craig crashes into it. He tears open a train, the train compartment, with a excavator, and he jumps in to the train compartment, and as he lands on his feet, he straightens his cuff. In GoldenEye, Brosnan is crashing through these buildings in this tank, and he crashes through a wall, and as he comes out of the rubble, he straightens his tie. And it's a nice little wink back to that movie.
So why do you think we put ourselves through 25 of these films, and it doesn't look to me as if it's stopping at all? What do you think there is in the Bond franchise,
character? I think about this when I'm alone. This is a great question. I think about this when I'm alone. And as much as I've thought about it from the time I was probably 6, I don't have a great answer. I do think it has something to do with this death wish. I do think that underlying Bond's character is a sadness, which Craig brings out, a sadness and a hopelessness that he just wants to die. But his sense of duty and his sense of rightness prevents that. It stands in the way. So he's driven by a moral rightness, but under it is a hopelessness, a sort of, just a what will be. If I die here, I die. I don't care, but I'm going to die doing this thing. I often think back to the moment in Goldfinger. I've loved this. I love this moment because we talk about Craig being vulnerable, but there's a moment in Goldfinger, and I think Connery did do this frequently, but it doesn't get talked about, when he's trying to disarm the bomb in Fort Knox, and it's counting down, and he's got 30 seconds, whatever. He has no idea how to do this. He has no idea how to dismantle this bomb. The clock keeps ticking. Connery is sweating. You can see in his face that he's worried. Does he run? No. Mm-hmm. He just stays there. So what, he just stays there, keeps fumbling with these wires, thinking that he's going to, no matter what he does, he's going to keep trying to dismantle this bomb, even if it just blows up in his face and kills him. At the very last second, of course, somebody reaches over and flips a switch, which is a joke. There was a switch all along that he doesn't see.
Well, don't you think also that no time to die reflects the spirit that you're talking
that's
about?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. That's the brilliant part of Craig's portrayal, is they take that death wish and they amp it up. You can see it. That's why he's so vulnerable, right? And you can see it. That scene in No Time to Die, as I've mentioned, where the bad guys are just shooting up the Aston Martin, he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
And it's only until she says, she implores him. I love that there's no line. She implores him with her eyes. She says, I didn't do this. I didn't do what you think I did. And then he turns on the machine guns.
That bit in the plaza with the car and the machine guns and his car.
It's exquisite.
I've been waiting for that for years because it's such a great little device.
Right.
You know, he's got this half an army in his car with all his weaponry. And he's just sitting there while the bullets can't penetrate the car and stuff. But unfortunately, they prefigured this in the preview. That scene where he's in the plaza.
Well,
I mean, that's
commercial movie making and marketing today. You're going to, you know, I wish that they wouldn't have spoiled that motorcycle jump where he comes up the steps.
Oh, yes, me too.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. Like your heart kind of like, that's the thing too, is action movies can be beautiful, you know.
Oh,
if you're not celebrating the body in motion,
you
then you're not
so
really
right.
making an action movie.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Tell me this. We've done it with Superman, and we've done it, I'm sure, with other heroes. Going back to childhood, is there a possibility of that with Bond? To, in some future iteration of this, going back to his early formative days, it seems to me Bond, in 25 times, has always been the mature, suave, ladies' man. I've never seen him as a teen or that. Am I missing something?
Oh, I don't want to see that.
Okay. So I'm just wondering whether you think this could withstand that.
I don't want to see that. I think, actually, as we wrap this up, this is, I think, officially our longest double take conversation. This, not only did Craig's portrayal introduce an emotional weight to the character that had only been hinted at before, this was the first character that had an arc. This was the first portrayal of Bond that had a storyline that began and was followed, if not explicitly, sort of peripherally over the course of five movies, right? A beginning and an end. That has never happened before. And in some ways, I worry that that is going to be the real kiss of death for this character. Prior to this, Bond has always sort of existed. You had this sort of vague storyline in your head. You knew that he had a wife. You knew that he was a commander in the Navy. You knew these things, but they weren't. Sometimes they would pop up as a plot device or a plot point. But the stories themselves didn't rely heavily on them the way they did here. And I worry now that audiences need this. They need this arc.
Mm-hmm.
They need this storyline. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to go back. And, you know, the mistake I think they might make is trying to do the Bond, the Craig Bond again in a different vein, right? I'm not sure. What I would love to see is, I don't know. I really don't know. And I'll tell you the truth. Until this movie, I would have fretted over the end of the Bond franchise.
Yes.
I can be done. I can be done with
it.
Because I think that younger audiences, it's lost on them. I don't know. They don't really get it. It's just an action movie.
And,
you know, you can plug this into anything. You can plug a different version of any human being into this role, whatever. That's fine. I think, you know, maybe this is the end. I don't know. I don't care anymore.
Well, this is the end of the mashup of Back Talk and double take.
Yeah.
So if our audience is confused by us, how confused are they if they don't know James Bond? 25 movies.
At 50, 60 years, right?
Was that it?